It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 88, we discuss an interview with beIN Sports' executive about their fight against media giants, news about ESPN3 beIN added to Xfinity X1, more poor TV ratings for a league in particular on US television, and we have a bunch of letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, we've survived Labor Day, lots of football in store. What for you this past week have been some of your highlights of what you've been watching?
Yeah, well, I was so excited to see Leeds United on a Friday, John Champion calling the match. We had it, obviously, on ESPN Plus in the United States play Middlesbrough, a matchup between two contrasting styles, Bielsa and Pulis, two top managers. Pulis is a top manager in the English game, the British game, whether people want to admit it or not. And obviously Bielsa is Bielsa, right? He's legendary. He's not everyone's cup of tea, but he's certainly someone I enjoy watching and analyzing over the years, going back to his time managing Argentina almost two decades ago. So what a matchup. John Champion was the perfect voice for it. It ended 0-0, unfortunately, but it was actually an entertaining game. Simultaneously, Dortmund-Hanover was on FS1, and that was a disappointing match. Dortmund had looked so lively in the opening match against Red Bull Leipzig or RB Leipzig a week earlier, and just didn't look it this time. Saturday morning, Chris, Leicester-Liverpool, which I think everybody probably watched the early match on NBCSN. It was an interesting match. I think that there is, in terms of NBC Studio, Chris, a real effort this season to push Liverpool and push Liverpool narratives. But then after that match, they ended up having to deal with the Alisson mess, right? And right. That this was, again, you know, following on the heels of Karius and then with his feet mistakes, and then the same sort of kind of sloppy mistakes you used to see out of Simone Mignolet. You have to begin to wonder if maybe Klopp is requiring too much of his goalkeepers in terms of playing with their feet. And that's that was an interesting focal point of discussion in the NBC studio.
Yeah, part of it too is, as NBC knows, in terms of the Liverpool fan base in the United States, it's not the largest, but it is a very large fan base, probably in the top three of the English clubs, with Man United beIN first. And then whether it's Chelsea or Arsenal, number two, and then Liverpool, either number three or number four, depending on the latest numbers. But they know that Liverpool is, I mean, an attacking side. Liverpool could be the story of the season. This could be the team that could go all the way. So they're obviously, I mean, thinking about, is this a team that we need to kind of focus on a little bit more, because that's going to generate more TV ratings? And then maybe focus a little bit less on Leicester, perhaps. And you mean, and I'm sure that goes in their thought process week in, week out, making sure that they're, I mean, keeping the fans or the viewers entertained. And especially with the TV ratings, I mean, kind of battle, just trying to keep those numbers beIN strong. They're always going to do that. They're always going to focus and feature Manchester United, I mean, as many games as possible on television, and as few as possible on NBC Sports Gold. But Liverpool could be the team to watch this season.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And obviously, we had Man City Newcastle. The first few minutes, it was the first 3 minutes or so of the match on NBC, was preempted for the end of John McCain's funeral service in Annapolis. So the first 3 minutes aired on NBCSN, which meant, I know this is a great thrill to you, Chris, we got two long intros from Marlo White, one on NBCSN, which took about 40 seconds, and one on NBC proper, which took about 30 seconds. And then the match itself was pretty pretty poor. I mean, Manchester City has made easy work of Newcastle over the course of the last several seasons. This is arguably the most one-sided series in top-flight English football over the last decade. Man City has not lost to Newcastle since Stuart Pearce was the manager, and only has one draw in that period. And generally, score lines are 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, 5-0. This was a 2-1 match where Manchester City just did not play well. I have to say they have not looked right all season since maybe the first 60 minutes of the Arsenal match, the opening matchup of the season. But I'm not sure that NBC is beginning to pull, even though they're obviously trying to appeal to Liverpool fans as a storyline, but they're necessarily pulling that card yet, that Man City is having the next year syndrome that we see so many champions have. From my vantage point, and maybe I'm, again, a Manchester City supporter and I'm hypercritical, I just don't see it in this team without De Bruyne. I don't see how they compete with Liverpool or, quite honestly, Spurs lost on Sunday, but I just don't see them at the same level right now. That might change when De Bruyne gets back. That might change when Liverpool suffers another injury or two. But right now, I think that there's some ways off the pace.
I missed that game. I actually, which I'll get to in a little bit, but I missed that game. But I can't believe you guys had to suffer the Arlo White intros on both the NBCSN and NBC. It's ridiculous. I mean, what I would like to see just one time is for Arlo to commentate a match without the long intro and without mentioning stats like every few minutes and just call the game. And I'm not sure if he'd be able to actually do it. Obviously, I think he probably could do it. Whether he would do a good job of it, I'm not sure. But I'd like to kind of take away all of that, all that comfort zone, all of those things that he throws in, and then just commentate the game and see what happens there. That would be interesting to listen to for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Maybe it's the way NBC wants him presenting. Maybe it's the preference of the American market. But the thing that frustrates me, because I actually like Arlo White as a commentator, probably more than you do during the course of the rest of the match. The frustrating part is, I think what ends up happening is some event in the match takes place before the co-commentator or commentators, if it's a three-man booth, are properly introduced. And then they're not able to actually jump into the commentary, co-commentary, or the analysis of what happens in the first 2 or 3 minutes of a match because of these long intros.
Right, the preamble.
Also, I will say part of it is NBC's tendency to cut right to him at the beginning of the match rather than having the 1 or 2 minutes in to lead in. That having been said, they do have the stand-ups with him and whoever it is, Graham Lasso or Lee Dixon, 5-10 minutes before the match starts on the Bridge program. Mm-hmm. Now it's called Premier League Live Sundays or Premier League Saturdays. But
right.
that program before the kickoff. But for whatever reason, even with that stand-up, he still feels the need, or they still feel the need to have him give a 30-40 second setting of the table intro, which, again, inevitably something happens in that period. Christian Eriksen scored a goal for Spurs in the first 10 seconds of a match he called last season against Manchester United, if you remember that.
Right.
At Wembley.
I don't think it's an NBC thing, though, because I mean, when you have Derek Ray or you've had John Champion step in from time to time, you know, working for NBC every once in a blue moon, that doesn't happen when they do it. And I think it's just his style. I mean, as a presenter or as a person that's kind of sideline reporter, talking to the camera and then talking to some of the talent and then interviewing some of the players, I think he does a fantastic job. It's just the commentating style where he just gets in the way of the game. And to me, that's not the NBC style. Yes, he's a good commentator, but it's becoming old and tired and a bit annoying with the same old shtick, like year after year, season after season. I'm just getting a little bit tired of it. I think listeners, some listeners and readers have gotten tired of it much, much sooner than I did. But it'd be nice just to spice it up a little bit, which I think there was one game, I'm not sure if it was this season, I think there was one game where he didn't go into the preamble. He just went straight into the game. I can't remember which game it was, or maybe I'm just imagining it. But it was good. It was like, wow, okay, this is cool. Actually, he's focusing on the game. But it's his style. I'm not a big fan of it. It is what it is, I guess.
So then the next morning, we had an assortment of MLS matches, USL matches that I kept an eye on Saturday night. The next morning, we had the Cardiff-Arsenal match, which was an exciting back-and-forth match. Arsenal, of course, eventually won it. Man United and Burnley, which, boy, that was really disappointing from the Burnley perspective. Again, I'm not sure if this is a direct result of them having Europa League, which they're now, of course, out of, or if they are going to genuinely struggle this season in the Premier League. I guess only time will tell on that. A bounce back game for Mourinho. Again, I hate to point this out to Man United fans, and I get eviscerated every time I point it out on Twitter, but I'm going to point it out here that when Marouane Fellaini is put in the team, Paul Pogba tends to play better. Now, is that a byproduct of Fellaini doing a lot of dirty work? Is that a byproduct of Fellaini his positioning sense, which allows Pogba to go forward? Whatever the case, it seems like he does better with Fellaini in that position than he does with Matic last season with Carrick, with Ander Herrera when he's played there. He did okay with Andres Pereira there in the first match against Leicester at times. But it seems consistently over the 3 years of Mourinho, when Fellaini's in the match, he plays better, which is something, again, Fellaini is beat up on. But we saw during the World Cup when Roberto Martinez inserted him in the Belgian team, a star-studded team, right? A team that's just stacked with superstars. Belgium played better with Fellaini in the team than they did without him in the team. People love to hate him, I think, because of his style, but he's an effective player in the Premier League and at the international level.
Right, he delivers. I mean, it's one of those things that I think for the purists in the game, they're like, oh, gosh, here he comes. But he does a job, and he gets it done, and it works.
Yeah, which is why I think David Moyes has just been killed for paying for him $27 million because he was a player he had at Everton. And bringing him to Man United, but I think he's probably paid off for Man United a lot more.
Oh, for sure.
Guys with much higher transfer fees, Di Maria and Mkhitaryan, among others, that they bought that just have not worked out for them.
Exactly. Anything else, Kartik, from this past week?
Sampdoria, Napoli, really good coverage on ESPN News. They were bumped to ESPN News, I guess, because of all the college football and tennis. Emotional game, Sampdoria, first home match after the collapse of the bridge in Genoa, and they played really well, 3-0. It was an exciting match, open match, and then the DC United Atlanta match was actually quite entertaining, and DC United beat Atlanta 3-1, and another really good game for Wayne Rooney, and another really good game for Luciano Acosta, who's come on since Rooney moved to Major League Soccer. So those were exciting matches. I kept a little bit of an eye on the Monaco Marseille game, which was an open match. Another loss for Monaco. They haven't started the season very well. Marseille won 3-2. It was a very, very good match. That was on BN.
So the DC United Atlanta game, I watched the first half of this, and I haven't watched a lot of DC United since Rooney joined. I mean, I've seen maybe a game and a half. What I have noticed, and I'm not sure if this is a complete coincidence or not, but when I have watched the game, it's been very Route 1 football. And not that there's anything wrong with that, because it is effective, but lots of long balls, kind of, whether it's the goalkeeper straight down to the attacking third, and then kind of just, whether it's a header, a flick-on header, almost like Bolton Wanderers style with Kevin Davis back in the day. That's what I've seen. And it's nothing wrong with it. It's just it's effective and it works. It's what I've seen thus far. Now, in regards to this past week, I was away for almost the entire weekend at a Labor Day soccer tournament for my daughter up in Orlando. So I didn't get a chance to watch many of the games. So I was up there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And what I did watch, though, was whenever I had a chance in the hotel, which is usually in the late afternoon, evenings, after the games from most of the day, I got to watch a lot of beIN Sports. And it's interesting timing with beIN Sports in regards to what's going on with them. We'll talk more about that later in the interview. So I got a chance to watch Real Betis against Sevilla, the Monaco-Marseille game that you mentioned, Kartik, which to me was my game of the week. Just an entertaining back-and-forth game. Goalkeeping errors, defensive errors, but again, it was a 3-2 win for Marseille. I watched the Celtic Rangers game. This was on Bleacher Report Live. on Sunday morning, early in the morning, and that was it felt like a cup final. Great atmosphere, and Rangers gave it all they could, but Celtic are still miles ahead in terms of quality on the pitch. But interesting match to watch. Saturday, I watched Real Madrid against Leganes, and I think it was, what else did I watch? Some of the Bundesliga, some championship with Millwall against Swansea, the Leicester-Liverpool match, and also the UEFA Champions League draw I watched, which was on Bleacher Report Live. That was interesting because there was no commentary. It was just a straight feed from UEFA, and there was no, no discussion, no analysis, no coverage at all from the actual talent from Turner Sports or Bleacher Report Live. It was just the raw feed, and which is okay. I mean, it was no commentary. It was just the raw feed, and you found out which teams were going to be in which parts. And sometimes I think that's all we're wanting or needing, really. What it did give me this past week, Kartik, is, and I knew this, but it kind of reinforces the fact that if beIN Sports did go away, we would lose a ton of soccer games on U.S. television. I mean, there's no other sports channel in the U.S. that shows as much soccer as beIN Sports does. So whether it's on a Friday night or Saturday or Sunday, if you're flipping through, there's game after game after game from around the world. And it's entertaining. I enjoyed it. No problems. And I watched a little bit of The Extra on the weekend edition. I think it was on the Sunday. And I ended up watching hours and hours of beIN Sports. And in the back of my mind, it just made me think, okay, if this went away, what would happen? Most of those games probably would go to streaming. And there you have even more games being moved from television to streaming platforms, making them less accessible. So that was going on in the back of my head. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, first item this week is interesting. ESPN 3 is now available on Xfinity X1 from Comcast, and they are also including SEC Network and ACC Network Plus in this. Really groundbreaking deal between two of the largest media companies in the country, Comcast and Disney. So if you have Xfinity X1, you will now be able to access ESPN 3 through your tablets, your computers, and your and also your television. So it's a pretty remarkable deal. This was announced yesterday, and exciting, and maybe a way that ESPN begins to kind of gravitate streaming content onto mainstream cable platforms. And let's face it, Chris, media companies, cable companies, they kind of have to team up because their cord cutters abound, and the trend isn't going to subside anytime soon.
Yeah, I like that Comcast is making it more accessible for soccer fans who have the Xfinity app, and they're at home and they're flipping through kind of the guide, and there is ESPN3 a lot more accessible than booting up your laptop and going to ESPN3.com and then logging in that way. The interesting thing for me is what coverage is still left on ESPN3, which some of the listeners might be wondering, okay, what does ESPN3 have that ESPN Plus doesn't have, or that the ESPN2 or ESPN1 or ESPN News doesn't have. And I'm looking just as one example for the UEFA Nations League, which kicks off today, Thursday, as we're recording this podcast. So ESPN3 has Latvia against Andorra, Finland against Hungary, Estonia against Greece, and Ukraine against Slovakia. And also one more, San Marino against Luxembourg. So that's the challenge, Kartik, I think, we have ESPN3 content available through Comcast and through other services, of course. But the amount of content that they'll be able to access, it's not going to be your most sought-after matches, but it is going to be some content that you couldn't get otherwise. All right, Kartik, in the next news item, an update on the U.S. rights to the Scottish Premiership. So we talked about this a few weeks ago, and this was that the rights package to the Scottish Premiership around the world had been taken away from MP and Silver due to some contract issues. And so the Scottish League was going to go ahead and have somebody else, a new broker, go ahead and acquire those rights, and then work with different broadcasters around the world to try to find to do deals with somebody in the US, somebody in Canada, so on and so forth. So the SPFL has moved pretty quickly, and they've secured a deal with a company called Infront, which is based in Switzerland. So Infront is now going to ahead and going to establish new agreements with broadcasters overseas that will allow matches from the Scottish Premiership, as well as rights to the Betfred Cup and other competitions from Scotland. As of right now, as of press time, as of podcast recording time, no deal has been done in the US, but it looks likely that it'll still be Bleacher Report Live that will have the access to those games, unless somebody else new comes in that wants them. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But just an update to let you know that things are progressing, and pretty soon we'll find out who has the rights to the Scottish Premiership. Having said that, though, under the agreement that the Scottish Premiership has with the different broadcasters worldwide, the current rights holder will continue to show some games until the new deal is done. So, for example, in the Scottish Premiership, in the next few weeks, there's going to be, I think, St Mirren against Celtic and a bunch of other games, and those games are going to be on Bleacher Report Live. So no change there. We'll have to wait and see once the deals are done whether or not those rights move elsewhere.
Yeah, Chris, I think it's important to note that at least in the U.S. market, it was a long period of time. There have been long windows where the Scottish League has been off of American television or off of American streaming. So there isn't much incentive. The MP Silva thing has created a monkey wrench, but I don't think there's much incentive to pull these matches off Bleacher Report Live. And the chances that someone else is going to bid on the property are probably minimal. Now, that's not the case in other global markets, but I think that's the case here. So I'd be very surprised if the matches end up anywhere else, or the matches end, or the league goes dark. I think they'll continue as is in this country.
Yeah, and from memory, I think the last numbers I saw for the Old Firm Derby, which is the Celtic Rangers match, and this would have been from, I think, a couple years ago, it was on Gold TV. It might have been the League Cup. I can't remember, or if it was the Scottish Premiership. But the numbers, the viewer numbers for that was approximately about 80,000, which that's the biggest game of the year. But 80,000 is pretty good when you compare that to, say, the Bundesliga, that's on FS1, FS2, on these major channels. So in perspective, it's good, but it's just one game. That's the issue. Now, with Rangers doing better, Aberdeen doing better, match the actual viewing numbers for those other games should increase too. But I think it is what it is, and it'll probably will stay on streaming at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's also worth noting that that there are the way the SPFL format is structured, and I actually kind of like it, but it's not something you can do in most leagues. The way they split the season after, or split the fixtures after a certain point in the season, you get more Old Firm matches because of that. Assuming Rangers are in the top half, right? So the way the league format operates, you get more attractive matchups, and then you get more relegation-oriented matchups too, if that appeals to some people. So I actually, a lot of people have been critical of the format of the SPFL in the top division. I kind of like it, and it's for me very appealing to watch some of these matches, even relegation battles at the end of the season. So that I think might factor into the numbers on Bleacher Report as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a little bit different. So if you're not used to kind of the format, it is one that you would have to study a little bit towards the end of the season to try to figure out, okay, what's going on here, just because it is so different. Moving on to TV ratings, from this past week, some of the numbers that came out, we'll have all of the numbers at worldsoccertalk.com, but some of the numbers, Newcastle against Man City, that NBC Saturday match from 12:30 to 2:30 Eastern time, 870,000 viewers. Burnley against Man United, 495,000 viewers. And then you have Bournemouth against Chelsea, 353. Liverpool against Leicester, 351. And Cardiff against Arsenal, 349. So all of the Premiership matches or Premier League matches in the US on television were 300. 50,000 effectively and above, all the way up to 870,000. Now, Sunday night's match, the DC United's Atlanta match, the one that I watched the first half, you watched the whole game there, Kartik, on FS1. That one on Sunday night in prime time from 7:30 to 9:30 had 155,000 viewers. And to put that into context, I just looked at a couple of other numbers. To put that into context, so you have the Premier League Goal Zone, which is the highlights show, goal highlights show on Sunday afternoons. That one had 267,000 viewers. And then Premier League Live, which is the bridge show on Saturdays, that one had 245,000 viewers. So you have more people sticking around to watch shoulder programming than you do actual game on Major League Soccer, on FS1, starring two of the teams that are right now you would think are two of the most attractive teams to watch on paper, as far as, you mean, Atlanta, which is a huge success story, and then DC United, that's got this resurgence, partly with Rooney, but also that they're just playing much, much better.
Yeah, and also significantly, those bridge programs tend to coincide with live Bundesliga matches on FS1 or FS2 that virtually no one's watching by comparison. So that's another little takeaway. Like, for example, Premier League Live, the 9:30 to 10 a.m. Eastern time runs directly alongside the kickoff of a Bundesliga game on FS1. And yet it's getting higher numbers. And then the same thing Sunday, the Goal Zone goes 1 to 1:30, which is at the same time as there's a Bundesliga game wrapping up on FS1 or FS2, whoever, whatever channel it's on. And generally, Goal Zone is getting higher numbers. So that's also very stunning, and it's getting higher numbers than MLS on some weeks, as we're seeing this week.
All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. We've got a bunch this week. First up is Jeffrey Allen. He says, seems like soccer made in Germany made German football more popular in the US than it is now. That show made me a soccer fan and a lifelong fan of FC Cologne. Somehow, Toby Charles made a household name of Borussia Mönchengladbach, which he did.
Yes.
But that's the thing, too. I mean, you have so many people talking about those days. I mean, like, since the late 70s, early 80s, vividly remembering those times watching that show, because it was one of the few shows, one of the only soccer shows on television, and it still has huge memories within soccer fans now, which I'm sure Jeffrey still watches FC Cologne because of that. But yeah, that's in response to last week's discussion about German football and soccer made in Germany. Ben says, top pod, Chris. As you said, as good as the talent is at beIN Sports USA, they have never done much to help themselves. They've had to rely on others to get themselves into the majority of homes, and their relationship with the viewers, customers, has been poor. So I'll get to that in a little bit, actually, in the interview that I did with Antonio Briseno, one of the head executive at beIN Sports for the United States and Canada. We dive a little bit more into that to get his perspective on that. Monty Reed says, as always, I enjoy the show. Streaming instead of broadcast TV. If ESPN Plus or Bleacher Report Live continue to get more and more leagues, I think this would be a good thing if all the games are available by streaming, as long as these companies are not just soccer. Example, several years ago, I did not have cable, and I subscribed to World Sports by Dish World so that I could watch beIN Sports for La Liga games. Included in the package is Willow Cricket Channel. I found myself watching cricket many Sunday mornings before any soccer matches kick off, and now cricket is one of my favorite sports. As I'm writing this email, I'm watching England against India in the Test match. I also noticed the other day that Sling does not allow you to view 3 days back as before with beIN Sports. So maybe that's something, and that's a follow-up again to last week's pod, with a question about on-demand on Sling TV, whether or not they're able to actually find some of the beIN Sports games. That's what it sounds like from Monty there, too, that's happening for him, too. Again, if you have the DVR feature, which is extra $5 a month, it's worth it. And that way you can just record whatever games you want to watch, and you make sure you don't miss them. Hernan Justo writes, hi, I'm a relatively new listener. My name is Hernan, and I'm from Argentina, living in the US since the early 1990s. Because I don't know about your podcast in the past, the last five I have heard is not much of a mention of South American leagues on TV. they're on channels, or talking about channels with Argentina League or Colombian League, Chilean League, Brazilian League, like Fanatis, TYC, Goal TV. You don't seem to cover them much, as I was surprised that you care about the future of the Scottish League. Scottish, really? Seems to me that Scottish football is as important as Faroe Islands soccer, while Southampton soccer with their crappy stadiums, South American soccer with their crappy stadiums, bad filming and poor refereeing skill, at my perspective, is better soccer than most European games. Bundesliga, I believe, is awful soccer. Most of La Liga, if Atletico, Barca or Real are not playing, the rest is very poor, similar to the Premier League, and not even any talk about Italian League. And funny enough, the best soccer in European soccer is on the feet of South American players. So I always wonder why. So Kartik, I'll mention too, for me personally, it's there's so much soccer on offering that it's difficult to watch a little bit of everything. I try to mix it up. I'm watching a lot more Spanish soccer than I've ever done before. I'm watching a little bit of MLS when I get an opportunity to. Of course, I watch the Premier League. I'm watching the more championship than I've ever done before. And I have access to the games from South America. And from time to time, I'll watch a Copa Libertadores game, or I'll watch a Boca game from the Superliga Argentina. The challenge for me is I don't know as much about those leagues. So it's hard for me to really kind of get into them, because I don't know the history and the traditions. And that's the thing I think that's missing big time for a lot of these South American teams and South American soccer in general, is there's, as far as I know, as far as our online source, like a website, there aren't a lot of sources in the United States to cater to that market that talk about the histories and traditions and, you mean, kind of the rivalries, etc. What are your thoughts, Kartik, and why do you not watch South American soccer?
Well, I do watch, try and watch the Copa Libertadores. There are a lot of people who have this point of view, even a lot of anglicized fans who tell me that it's much better to watch leagues from South America. They don't they don't like the Premier League. They don't like La Liga, and they have just this contempt for Serie A. So it's actually kind of similar to what Hernan has written in. And there are anglicized people who say this. I think it's accessibility, one. I do try and watch the Brazilian League, because the Brazilian League is, to me, a little more open. The skill level is high. I think tactically it's a little more sophisticated. But the things that I've seen from other leagues is an over-reliance on physicality and really kind of a less sophisticated tactical game than you get, for example, in Serie A. Let's just address that for a minute, because that seems to be the league everybody likes to pick on. For whatever reason, I like watching Serie A. I'm very excited it's on ESPN now. I probably will watch every game that they show over the air on ESPN channels, and then I'm trying to watch as many ESPN Plus games as possible. I like the tactical variation in Serie A. I like that managers make changes on the fly. Now, is maybe the skill level or the some of the other nuances of the game the same as in South America? Not necessarily. And are the most outstanding players in Serie A, La Liga, Premier League, or many of them South Americans? Absolutely. But I think you don't want to sell those leagues short. I think Hernan's point about the rest of La Liga being awful besides those three teams is just a very stereotypical lazy view, and I always push back on that view. I think La Liga, top to bottom, is the best league in the world, hands down.
Yeah.
if you don't agree with me, that's fine, but that's my opinion, and I know a lot of people share that opinion. And of course, I like the entertainment level that the Premier League offers us. So I do think there's more time and space that we perhaps should devote to South American football. We've done it at times on this podcast, but I think, unfortunately, for whatever reason, most of the American audience hasn't gravitated to that. Now, they do watch Liga MX, which is not a South American league, which is a league that a lot of South Americans I talk to have contempt for. But that's certainly a league that we cover closely, and I watch pretty closely. This is one of the few weeks I didn't watch a Liga MX games a game match actually. But generally, I'm watching one or two matches in that league a week. And again, it's accessibility. That's the most accessible league in the U.S. other than maybe the Premier League. They're 1A and 1B. So. That's basically my thoughts.
Yeah, one more thing on that, and that is there's not a lot of news about the South American leagues from the sports media side of things. So if there are announcements about whether it's, say, Gol TV or TYC Sports or others, they're not communicating anything to us in English. So Gol TV, I don't think, even has a PR department or has any communications people that are actually providing information to not just to me but to the media. So it's a little bit of a two-way street, too, that if there is news to report on, and we'd love to read about it and talk about it, but if they're not actually letting us know, making us aware of it, then it's hard to actually know that it exists and to get the information out there. Such as, I mean, at the same time, I mean, whether it's ESPN or NBC or Univision or others, they do a really good job of, making sure that we have all of the latest information. Or if we want to interview some of the people behind the scenes, that we have an opportunity to do that, to get the news out there. So that's part of it also. Daniel D. writes, wanted to write in to talk about your comment regarding low Bundesliga ratings in the US and the way that the Bundesliga is trying to push its way to becoming a top league in the world next to the Premier League and La Liga. The reason, I believe, is because of the fans minus buy-in ones. Every club there has a pride of their local team, and I think the way you see most German leagues and the fans and the passion, it's nearly impossible for them to share their team with foreigners. That's just my two cents on the subject. Plus, the Bundesliga continues to compete with the Premier League rather than just trying to build its league and not pay attention to the outside noise around it. Next up is Jose Rodriguez. Jose gives us a suggestion. He says, so we have specific channels for different leagues in the US. Examples are NFL networks and NHL networks. What if US soccer created their own channel? The programs could be each league have its own show recapping and previewing the week's action, shows dedicated to showing highlights of U.S. men's national team and women's national team players that don't play in the domestic league, documentaries like they did recently with the future national team players that they released to their YouTube channel. However, the biggest thing they could show would be the U.S. Open Cup, a great way to get it on TV, the earlier rounds. They could still sell off the rights for the later rounds. Also, they could show matches for the U20 and U18 tournaments that the national team players play in around the year. This could be a great way for fans to have an understanding of what players will be coming in the ranks in the future. Also builds a closer bond between the fans and U.S. soccer. Kartik, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I don't know that any cable company is going to pick up a U.S. soccer channel, right? I don't know that there would be enough of an audience for it unless they were able to put MLS matches on there, right? Which they might be able to because Soccer United Marketing handles media for both. But then that would undercut their deal with ESPN, right, with ESPN Plus. So that would be an issue. I think the other aspect of this is that the U.S. Soccer Federation doesn't necessarily like investing a lot of money. They're a bottom-line-driven entity. Whether you want to believe that or not, the on-pitch performance, all of that comes second. If they can't see a metric where they would get a huge return on their investment initially, or at least a moderate return on their investment initially, history tells us and their own actions tells us the U.S. Soccer Federation is risk averse with that sort of thing. They won't do it. That's unfortunate. I think it's a great concept. But there are people that have pitched similar concepts to this, to them and to Major League Soccer through the years. And they just don't want to outlay that amount of cash to get anything going because, again, they're a very bottom-line-driven entity. Now, that might change in the future if there's different leadership, but under the current leadership, that's the way they view things.
Yeah, two things on this one. One would be that it's hard enough to get any channels on television. For example, beIN Sports is having that challenge 6 years after being in business, trying to get their channels, beIN Sports and beIN Sports en Español, onto kind of lower tier sports packages in the United States. They're on the higher tiers, which cost a lot of money. And after 6 years of trying, they've been haven't had much luck actually trying to achieve that. So in other countries, it's a lot easier. If you have a channel, you have a TV channel, and you want to distribute it across, you mean cable or satellite, it's much, much easier. In the US, it's much, much, much more difficult. Number two would be just that this is probably the worst time possible to launch a channel like this. I think the morale among most people in the US, about the US men's national team especially, is at an all-time low. The attendances for a lot of the U.S. games have been low. There's not a lot of things to look forward to. I think I see the worth of it. I see it more as a YouTube channel, something that they can commit to, something that they're in control of, something that can maybe start off small and then grow over time. But right now, I don't see it being on television. All right. So if you have any questions, comments, feedback, advice, tips, you name it, just let us know. We'd love to read those out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post comments on the website, worldsoccertalk.com. Now, next up is an interview. We've got an interview with Antonio Briceño from beIN Sports. He's the Deputy Managing Director for the US and Canada. So he's oversees the US and Canadian side of beIN Sports. And it's an interesting conversation because it really goes to the heart of what the issue is right now between beIN Sports and Comcast and DirecTV. For those who don't know, Comcast has been removed from DirecTV, DirecTV Now, UVerse, and Comcast is not available through any of those TV providers. So beIN Sports finds themselves in a very difficult position. I wanted to talk to beIN Sports to find out, to get their side of the story. We've heard from Comcast. Comcast has said that beIN Sports couldn't guarantee the rights that they would have in the next rights cycle, which I talk about in the interview, which I find incredibly unfair because you look at NBC. NBC cannot guarantee that they'll have the Premier League after the Premier League deal runs out. Fox cannot guarantee that they will have the Bundesliga or Major League Soccer after the deal runs out. So Comcast definitely trying to squash beIN Sports without any shadow of a doubt that that's what they're trying to do. And it puts beIN Sports in a difficult position. Also puts soccer fans in a difficult position. So whether you watch beIN Sports or not, I think it's important to fight for your rights to be able to watch soccer, I mean, from around the world, whether it's on television or streaming. And again, we get into that. So we'll join Antonio Briceño mid-conversation, and then I'll jump in a couple of minutes to ask Antonio a follow-up question. But here goes that interview with Antonio Briceño from beIN Sports.
So what is crazy about this whole situation is we've been telling these guys, I mean, we knew the renewals were coming from the past 6 years. And I can tell you that as early as 2 years ago, we started having the conversations and we told them, look, guys, I mean, when renewals come, the only way that we can subsist as a company and continue purchasing rights that are valuable, which is what you want from us, is for you to increase my distribution so I can have really a solid advertising business. If not, if you're going to insist on just keeping the margin and keeping me up there because you make more margin with beIN and the fans being on a package where you have to buy through two or three different packages to get to the content they want, then we're going to have to obviously increase the fees. And that's just the nature of it. But that's not what we want to do. What we want to do is to steady state our deals, but we need to increase distribution. And unfortunately, I mean, the whole situation of the media consolidation that is happening in this country, I mean, these guys just come and squeeze the little boy. I mean, and to me, it's And obviously, I'm talking about from the side of the David, and I'm sure that a lot of people will say, well, that's what he's going to say. But it's the reality. I mean, if, just think about it. These are multi-billion dollar companies that completely control the pipeline of distribution in this country. And they have all the leverage in the world. Now, on top of that, they have been starting to become completely virtually integrated. So they buy the sports channels and they compete for the same rights that I need to survive.
Now, when the FCC dismissed the complaint, which to me was a very valid complaint that you filed to the FCC about Comcast, about them giving favoritism really to kind of the NBC sports and Universos and not on an equal playing field for beIN Sports, were you surprised by that decision?
Well, I mean, I want to clarify one point. I mean, remember that the file wasn't dismissed. It was dismissed without prejudice. And I know it might sound like a technicism, but there is a difference between the two. Because if they would have dismissed it, it would have meant that, hey, what you're saying has no grounds and we don't believe in your argument. That's not what happened. What they said is there was insufficient information presented by us for them to really make a ruling one way or the other. So we could actually go and refile that case for a certain period of time and present the information that they say that they were missing. We're in the process of deciding whether that's something that we want to pursue, because as you can imagine, I think that our time and our money is better spent in bringing the content back to our loyal fans. But it's something that is an open possibility still, and I wouldn't want to claim in any way, shape, or form that Comcast retaliated against us, because I'm not in any other company's head. But I can tell you, it's definitely a very strange situation that that they totally changed their tune in the negotiations, and then they withdraw the offer even for an extension on the same terms that we were having with them for the past 6 years.
I think Sports Business Daily had a story a couple of weeks ago that talked about beIN Sports and Comcast. And there was a Comcast source, anonymous, but it was a Comcast source that said to John Orand that that Comcast felt that beIN Sports didn't show, enough that they would have the rights for a long time for a lot of these sports. They couldn't guarantee, which that's the whole thing about the sports TV rights business anyway, is that whether Fox with the Bundesliga, they have it till, what, 2020? There's no guarantee that's going to renew. Nothing's guaranteed in this business.
I will ask Comcast, I mean, are you guaranteed you're going to renew Premier League rights? I mean, no one is guaranteed. These are live negotiations. There's a lot of new players in the marketplace that are after sports rights. And obviously, you can imagine who they are. It's the big digital players that have definitely all the money in the world. And I mean, I'm sure as a very informed person that you are, you've seen the recent moves of some of them in other territories than the U.S., at the end of the day, what you said is exactly right. I mean, who's to say? I mean, these negotiations sometimes are very delicate in the sports rights, especially when these are close bids and everything needs to be extremely well audited and taken care of in light of everything that happened in the past years with certain sports rights in other companies.
So DirecTV is a big hit. Comcast is a big hit. How confident are you that there's not going to be any other TV providers to follow? Is beIN Sports safe with the providers that you already have under your belt?
Look, I mean, I cannot speak for what's in their minds. I mean, I would really hope that in light of the, I mean, we have had, and if, I mean, I'm very happy for you to put that in the podcast. And I want to send out a big thank you to the overwhelming response we have had from people that love the brand, love the soccer. They might not have all the information, so they sound confused in certain times, and that's all fair and good because they don't have the whole story. But the reality is there's been millions of shows of support, first with Comcast and now with DirecTV. So the answer to everybody is, I don't know. I mean, it's up to them whether we can return. What I can tell you is that we will not be bullied by any company, that we have 100% of support from our shareholders to continue operating in this country. Bein is not going anywhere. We're not going away. And if we have to work with only one company that wants to partner with us and understand the true value of partnership and the true value of what we should all be doing, which is bringing the content fans crave and love in the best possible way, that will be our partner in the U.S., and we'll work with them. But fortunately, we have several of them already. We have good news. I cannot tell you about some of the deals that are happening because it's very confidential, but we're not going anywhere. I can tell you that.
All right, Kartik. So there you go, the interview with beIN Sports. To get their side of the story, what are some of your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I genuinely sympathetic with beIN. I think that there's probably a double standard here with the way Comcast and AT&T/DirecTV is treating them. There are a couple things I do want to point out. One is that I do think that that whole rights cycle thing is interesting because American sporting properties tend to sign longer rights deals, which is part of the reason ESPN, Disney have had so much financial difficulty recently, is that they've committed long term to the SEC and the ACC and the Pac-12 and all of these long term media deals, television deals that have created a huge outlay of cash from them initially. But there is a guarantee that ESPN in 2022 or 2025 will be showing SEC football and SEC basketball. I mean, that's just a reality. beIN doesn't have that luxury. So I think it's a little bit of gotcha because beIN is dealing in international rights, with the exception of the Conference USA package they've had, dealing with international sporting entities, whether it be La Liga, Liga or the Turkish League, as well as their non-soccer property. So that's a little bit of a gotcha there. The thing I have to point out, though, and I think you've pointed this out previously on shows, is that he's looking for soccer fans in the U.S. to rally behind beIN. And my experience now, just informally on Twitter and on Reddit, is because beIN was perceived as inaccessible when U.S. qualifiers for the 2014 and 2018 cycle ended up on the channel, away qualifiers, matches that were in other CONCACAF nations other than Mexico. Mexico's rights are handled similarly to the U.S.'s rights. They created a sour relationship with the people now that they need to rally behind them, to the point where I'll be on Reddit and people are saying, oh, this is great. If they collapse, I can actually watch La Liga. Mm-hmm. And I was on the MLS Reddit yesterday or 2 days ago, and people were saying that, oh, good, I hope they're gone. Then La Liga I might be able to watch La Liga on another channel. I might be able to watch PSG on another channel. So unfortunately, they poisoned the well, or maybe not deliberately or intentionally, but that well has been poisoned, and it's difficult for them now to fully rally soccer fans in the U.S. Behind trying to keep them on air. People are just used to having accessible matches on Fox, ESPN, now Turner, and obviously NBC with the Premier League. But that they want to see the properties beIN has on that sort of channel. Now, the problem is those of us who've been around for a long time, Chris, are used to channels that are largely committed to soccer. I mean, I didn't think I would be saying this 5 years after the fact, but I do miss Fox Soccer Channel. And beIN gives us bridge programming, bumper programming that is soccer centric, and also gives us soccer analysis in the middle of the week that we don't get on mainstream American channels. So I think it would be a very bad thing if it went away. But unfortunately, a lot of soccer fans in this country don't have that attitude anymore.
And that's the thing. The U.S. Away matches in the World Cup qualifying, I mean, this has been going on for years, not just this World Cup qualifying, but for the last 6 years, those away matches, in many ways, they've come back to haunt be in sports, because in hindsight, maybe it would have been better to actually have an ESPN or Fox cover those games, because what's happened was those games were on beIN Sports. But like you said, Kartik, is a lot of people complain like, I can't get it. I don't have access to it. The reality was is that you had Go 90, which is free. You could watch the games for free through there. There were so many streaming services that had beIN Sports. And actually, on the television side, which is really kind of where kind of the rubber meets the road on the cable and satellite side, is that beIN Sports wasn't as readily available as your FS1s or your NBCSNs, etc. So in some ways, it's come back to haunt them, where that is the reality out there. I think among social media, you mentioned beIN Sports, and it's like, I want to see them go under. And which is a sad thing, really, for me to... I mean, hopefully they'll stick around. The challenge that they have is, Kartik, is that in order to have any chance of renewing this deal with La Liga, which is going to run out in about a year and a half, is once this deal runs out, is that I'm sure they're going to be interested in trying to renew those rights, but they have to have greater distribution. They have to have the beIN Sports and beIN Sports en Español on the same sports tiers as the NBCSNs, Universos, FS1s, FS2s, and right now they don't. So in order to survive, in order to actually still get that La Liga, any chance of renewing those rights, they have to be on lower packages. They have to be on packages that are more accessible, that are going to increase the distribution. And without that, any chances of them renewing the rights to La Liga are done. If that's done, then the channel effectively goes out of business, because it's very similar to Fox Soccer Channel, where they lost the Premier League rights, and within, 3 months, they were gone. They were done. And that's the challenge that beIN Sports have. And I'm very sympathetic to Kartik, because it's been 6 years. They've been fighting to try to get on these lower channels, those lower tier packages, in order to increase the distribution. And you've got companies like Comcast, who is a distributor, a TV provider, and also a content producer. They've got the NBC Sports channels, they've got the Universos and Telemundos, and they've got the rights to the Premier League, which is the greatest competitor to La Liga. So I wonder, though, if it'll come back to haunt Comcast, because with their dealings with beIN Sports and kind of how they're really trying to really shut down beIN Sports, whether it'll come back to haunt them, because then eventually maybe La Liga rights go to an ESPN or go to a Fox or somebody, and now they're competing head-on-head against NBCSN with the Premier League, and whether it actually be better for them to actually keep it on beIN Sports and have it so it's not doesn't have as great of a distribution as a FS1 or a ESPN.
Yeah, Chris, it's such an uphill battle for beIN. I mean, I wish them luck, and I think it'll be good for soccer's footprint in this country if they can persevere and get through this. But the odds are really daunting.
They are. I'm not ready to give up. I mean, for my side, I'm thinking. I mean, for soccer fans who are frustrated by this whole situation, is really go with your feet. I mean, go and cancel your subscription to Comcast or DirecTV and go to some place that does value soccer, that does value beIN Sports and La Liga and Liga and these other programming. And that's the thing too. I mean, hopefully beIN Sports will be around, because they do provide a good product and provide tons of coverage for soccer fans, no matter what leagues you enjoy watching. All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, going into this weekend, another big one in the world of football and soccer. What should they do?
Try and get through the international break and enjoy your football.